Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Joseph Potashnik and Rabbi Eric Greenberg. And here we go with a wonderful show today. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. The question is, how can we find sanity in an insane world? We're so honored and blessed to have Rabbi Joseph Potashnik and Rabbi Eric Greenberg to let us know how to survive and how to keep our sanity while the world is so scary and threatening. We need to stay calm and cool and have faith. Put down stress and put up prayers and trust that this too shall pass. Let me start with Rabbi Potashnik, a very, very warm welcome. He is the former president and presently the executive vice president of the New York Board of Rabbis, the largest interdenominational body of its kind in the world. Welcome, Rabbi Potashnik.
Thank you, Joyce. Thank you, Rabbi Greenberg. I was just listening to your introduction. I thought, if this is going to be my best year, what do I have to look forward to after this? So hopefully each year is considered the best year of that period. And I'm glad you have both of us on because I'll talk about sanity and Rabbi Greenberg will talk about his area of specialization, insanity.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Anyway, Joyce, I was telling a group of rabbis recently, and Rabbi Greenberg was there, that there is a town in Indiana called New Harmony, a very appropriate name for a place. When you go there, you're greeted by a building that has the Ten Commandments, but they're written horizontally. You have to walk all around the building to read all the commandments, which says to you that wherever you travel, those commandments must travel with you, which is a good lesson for all of us, that ultimately we need to be connected to our religious roots, that we always turn to our religious sources for strength and support during all kinds of challenging times. The second thing is that there is a statement there by Rabbi Hal Kushner, one of the greats of the rabbinate, who talks about let the warmth of the sun melt away the fog so we see each other more clearly. And I think all of us have to recognize that if we're going to get through any critical period, now we're talking about this one, we have to see each other as members of one human family. We believe differently, but we belong to one. We all look back at the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve. So we're all connected. So a crisis for me is a crisis for you. I was telling a reverend last night, we were having a conversation. I said, look at the contrast between Charlottesville and Houston. Look at the difference of what occurred in those places. Charlottesville was us against them. Hate mongers against those who protested the hate mongers. Houston, the flooding, people came together. We say how wonderful it is when brothers and sisters gather. Look at what happens when strangers gather. Those were strangers, people who got on kayaks and started rescuing neighbors, people they didn't even know. I'll never forget that picture of a young child holding on to the body of her drowned mother, waiting for help. And, you know, how someone came by, didn't know them, saw the need, and of course, helped the child, and the body was taken as well. That's what we need to emphasize in our world, that we are family, and family goes through crisis together. So, yes, these are very, very mercurial times. We have a president who has really specialized in exacerbating tensions, pitting us against them, not being the unifier. Although I will say this, in Houston, his second visit, there was a demonstration of coming together, of his bringing some people together, being with survivors. I wish he would do more of that. I wish he would talk of a more unifying language. But I understand he looks at his base. His base loves the us against them. So it's, I think, incumbent upon us to create a base, a bigger base, of people who want to work together. Coalition building has to be the norm for us, because you know, Joyce and Rabbi Greenberg, there are extremes out there that we're not going to cultivate, nor do we want to cultivate, because they don't respect us. And if you don't have respect for the other, you don't belong with the other. So I think we have to strengthen our particular base and speak as loudly as possible, and hopefully good triumphs over evil, unity triumphs over divisiveness, and we will get through this. We've got through many crises over the years. I'm old enough to remember Vietnam, you know, that missile crisis in Cuba years earlier, the assassination of a president, the shooting of another president. We've gone through some turbulent times, and we are here today. So when we go to the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, we pray for another year, a good year. We don't say a fabulous year, a great year. Let it be a good year, a year in which there is goodness. And I think that's part of the answer. And you know what you realize? That we need community. You know, we have Facebook and all of the other social media outlets, but ultimately we need to see the person, hug and hold the person. When we come together, I think we find inner strength. That's why when you say the mourner's prayer, the Kaddish, you do it with a minion, with a quorum of 10 people. Because here you are, you've lost a loved one, you're hurting deeply, but when you walk into a room and there are other people there who have their own pains, their own problems, and they stand with you when you recite the Kaddish, that gives you additional comfort. So I think it shows how much, how important we are to one another.
And while that is so true, the importance of one another, including interfaith, regardless of color, creed, religion, that we do need to stand together as one for the sake of one and all. It's just so scary because we have an administration that not only divides the country on this level, but even the parties are not brought together to make decisions, even on that level.
Well, this is a moment for real leadership. I think when you have someone who is a divisive figure, the question becomes, what's the counter force? Who's going to respond on the other side? So we need people in both parties to stand up and say, we will work with one another. You know, when one doesn't lead, it requires others to lead. And we do have people in this country who have some leadership qualities. They need to become more vocal, more visible, so that we find that there is that voice of sanity in a world that is becoming increasingly insane. You know, I think it was said that Trump's base support is about 30 to 35%. That means there are 65% or so that don't appreciate that approach. Well, 65 is bigger than 35. So hopefully that leaders in Congress, religious leaders around the country, people, grassroots, need to form these stronger, bigger communities to confront the challenges of the day. Look, one of the things we have in New York that we're very proud of, we have strong relationships with the faith communities. We have the Cardinal. We have Protestant ministers, we have evangelicals, we have Muslims, we have all the different faith. You go to a meeting, for example, of a commission of religious leaders, and you can say, here comes everybody, in the words of James Joyce. Everybody comes together. When I walk into that room, no matter what's going on in the world, and I look around and I see people who are sitting with me and standing with me, I realize that I'm not alone. And I think that has to be part of the solution here. Look, you talk of prayer. Prayer is very important because prayer helps us realize that there is a higher authority. There is a divine design, and we rise a little bit higher when we pray. It kind of elicits that response from within, which says to us, is this the best I can do? Can I be doing more? So I think prayer is very important.
Prayer is very, very important. I just want to share something I've seen that I really appreciate, and it fits right in here. If God brings you to it, he will bring you through it. Happy moments, praise God. Difficult moments, seek God. Quiet moments, worship God. Painful moments, trust God. And every moment, thank God. So I believe we have to thank God for our blessings while we're trying so hard to overcome our limitations with this world and all the insanity that's going on.
Well, don't you find, for example, when there are crises, religious leaders very often are the ones in the forefront, are the ones leading the charge. So yes, they pray, but it's also they pray with their feet. It's when they leave the house of worship that they're gathering people together, convening, communicating, doing all the things necessary to form that reservoir of resiliency, because we need people who are going to stand tall and stand strong. You know, I often use the example of 9/11, where carpenters came down to what was called Ground Zero, although I don't like the name Ground Zero, but the World Trade Center site, and they built a platform so the Hanukkah menorah would stand just as tall as the Christmas tree, because the Christmas tree was 20 feet high, the menorah was 9 feet. So Christian carpenters built a platform to equalize. And, you know, at that moment we looked at that. We said, wow, we are equals. We stand together. We stand tall and proud. We need to carry that spirit forward, especially at a time when we're going to be remembering those who died on September the 11th. So we learned from that horrible day. Look how we rebuilt after that. You know, do you remember there were those who said New York would not recover? New York would never, ever, you know, be the same. And here we are. And we have recovered. I remember the FDNY lost 343 people. People say that department is decimated. You lose 343 at one time, and then you lose many others since that time who suffered with 9/11 related illnesses. And yet FDNY today is so strong. First responder agencies so strong. How do we do it? We said we wouldn't be able to, and yet we did it. So, you know, it is said when you're born, you begin, but sometimes you have to learn how to begin again. And we did it. We'll do it again. And even during this difficult time, we will find the strength to overcome some of the hatred. Look at Boston. Look what happened in Boston a week after Charlottesville. You saw the protesters there. They outnumbered the hate mongers 200 to 1. 200 to 1 came forward to say, not here. We're not going to tolerate your hatred here. And the hate mongers, those in the, you know, the alt-right and the neo-Nazis, white supremacists, they left. They left. They retreated. So when you have that strong coalition on one side, and by the way, there is hatred. There's hatred on the left. There's hatred on the right. When you have a strong coalition to stand up to either, I think eventually you are victorious. But it takes a commitment. It takes a real, you know, cooperation amongst the different faith groups. Thankfully, we live at a time when we do have people who care about one another. So Houston is going to rebuild. Look at what we went through with Sandy, with Katrina. We rebuilt. It's still going on, but there was a determination that we can overcome this crisis. That kind of invincible spirit, so to speak, that we feel nothing is going to stop us, that has to be the part of the answer.
Well, what's so scary is that the country is on such a level of divisiveness that they don't talk to each other. I call them the Trumpets, the people who follow him. They are so committed to their position, you can't even say anything. There's no talking. There's no coming together. There's no compromise. And what pains me so much is the Republican Party, which has taken over the House, the Senate, the White House, that they're bullies there, and the Republican senators are too afraid to speak up and take a stand. They're just going along for the Trump ride, and that's what really bothers me. They're selling their souls to the devil.
I think the American people will not tolerate this kind of stagnation, this kind of immature behavior. I think American people elected officials because they wanted accomplishments. They want to see health care, tax reform, infrastructure, all these things being done. They haven't seen any of that. They haven't seen all. They've heard a lot of bluster, but they've seen nothing in terms of an accomplished record. And I think after a while, you've seen these town halls. People are livid. People say, "We elected
yes.
you. What happened? You know, why aren't you doing anything?" Look, Trump has, a 30% approval rating? Congress has a 10%. Congress has, I think, a 10% approval rating. So people are fed up, and when they vote, they're going to take into consideration all that wasn't done while it was promised, and I think they're going to make a decision that is going to be compatible with their anger. These people better realize that their stay in office is going to be short-lived. Unless they produce some fruits, you know, for their labor. Right now, they produce nothing except a lot of noise. No light, but a lot of thunder.
Even with the days ticking by, and I find every day there's another announcement that gets me crazy, because it's against humanity. Where are the people who you know, who I know, who are so highly intelligent, not even seeing it? Oh, give him a chance. He'll be the best president we ever had. What are they, in a coma or something? I don't get why they don't get it.
Well, you have to understand that many people who voted for Trump were people who felt forgotten. They people who felt left out. They said that nobody cares about us. You know, factories closed, jobs were lost. People were desperate. And sometimes when someone comes along and says the right things, you say, well, at least this person hears what I'm saying. The other politicians don't hear me. They just, you know, have said the same thing over the years, but we haven't seen any results. So I think they felt Trump is going to be, you know, the guy who cleans the swamp.
The savior.
Yeah, that's how they saw him. And they're hoping that he's going to, match his words with deeds. So far, we've heard a lot of words, unnecessary words, unfortunate words. And I think that's why you're seeing that base shrinking. It's shrinking. It's not growing. You can't tell me the Trump support is growing. So maybe at some point he realizes, if possible, that I'm not going to be reelected, or I'm not going to be seen as any kind of accomplished president if I continue just to speak and do little.
As I said, what pains me the most in all of this is the people I know that are so highly intelligent and don't get it. And I'm saying, wow, if they don't get it, how can we expect the masses, the average person, to get it? I every couple of months I've called them and just checked in to see if there was any change. And out of all those people that voted for him that I'm close to, only one said, my God, they promised health care for 7 years. They've done nothing. They're doing nothing. Only one. All the rest are standing by him, waiting for him to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with that, too.
Well, again, some people are more patient than others, but I think what I said earlier, you're seeing a lessening of support. He doesn't have the strong numbers he had before. I think there's some buyer's remorse. But look, I have to believe that some of the people around him, Gary Cohen, Steve Mnuchin, you know, General Kelly, and the others, they're smart enough to recognize that they need to produce. They need to show, you know, at the end of the day, that report card has to have some tangible results. It can't just be more rhetoric, you know, more of this wish list without anything to support it. So these people are going to give him a little more time. Look, he promised more jobs. Coal mines are going to open, and Carrie is going to bring, you know, more jobs here. Meanwhile, they ship the jobs to Mexico, and very few coal mines have opened. And so I think when people, you know, pierce through the veil, they'll say, wait a minute, we've been deceived here. We've been sold a bill of goods, and there's nothing, you know, in that basket. So I guess two things have to happen. One, people have to be disillusioned, and others have to be determined to make a difference. And I think you're going to see in the next 6 months or so. I know it's you know, every day becomes a every day becomes debilitating, but I think you're going to see people standing up and saying, we can't continue on this path. We need to find an alternative route. And I wish, you know, it's interesting. John McCain has spoken about bipartisanship, but he's been a lone voice. We need others to come forward. Lindsey Graham. I know Lindsey Graham, who, by the way, is speaking. Interestingly, he's speaking at a Slichot, a Saturday night before Rosh Hashanah. He's speaking in a synagogue in New Jersey. He's coming up here. But there have been some.
Are you going to be there?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try because I like Lindsey's great. He has a certain he's not afraid to say what he thinks, and he doesn't care if it ruffles some feathers. I like that. I like it's not like, you know, he tests the poll numbers before he makes, you know, a pronouncement. He's out there saying what he thinks needs to be said and heard. So he's speaking at a synagogue. I think you're going to find, again, there'll be this growing feeling of disillusionment, and there'll be a growing feeling of the need for bipartisanship. Those two things coming together will be the precursors for change.
I love listening to Lindsey Graham and McCain, but it's so horrible that they are lone voices with the whole Republican Party. We know that secretly these men get it, but they're terrified of Trump. They're living in fear of losing people because of Trump. So they're just standing silent.
Well, in order for this president to get anything accomplished, for example, in the Senate, he needs the cooperation of the Senate Majority Leader. We know what he said about Mitch McConnell, and whether you like Mitch McConnell or don't like Mitch McConnell, I don't understand how a president thinks that he's going to get legislation passed in spite of Mitch McConnell, that he's going to go over the majority leader. It needs the cooperation of the party. And one of the things you find with Republicans or people of either party, they don't want to see their leader lambasted publicly. I think many Republicans are very angry that Mitch McConnell, who they designated as their majority leader, is the one who's been attacked time after time by this president. So Congress is coming back from vacation. I think you're going to see certain changes taking place. But what does that do for the rest of us? The rest of us cannot sit back and say, wait for Congress to do it. We have to be very, very aggressive in terms of participating in marches, writing the letters, making the calls. You have to be an engaged member of citizenry. You can't be a silent. We, you know, interestingly, Jewish tradition, this is true probably of all religious traditions, no such thing as an innocent bystander. You can't simply sit back and say, let someone else do it while a town is crumbling, while pieces are falling. You have to ask, what else can I do? And I think if people would be more engaged, if they would make Congress, their congressional representatives know that we're watching you and we're holding you accountable. And there's an election coming. You're going to pay a price. If we don't see some responsible behavior, I think that sends a message. But it requires activism. It can't just be, why aren't they doing enough? What are we doing? That's the question we have to ask ourselves.
Great question, Rabbi. And I just want to quote Martin Niemöller here. First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. To me, that kind of hits it on the head.
Well, look at Charlottesville for a moment. Talking to officials there, you had I don't know why we call them neo-Nazis. They're Nazis. They use the same script that's been used all the time. There's nothing neo about them, except they're living today. You had white supremacists. You had these hate mongers who stood across the street from a synagogue. And they were, you know, it's an open carry state, so you can carry weapons there without any punishment. They stood across in the synagogue, and the president of the congregation in Charlottesville, conservative synagogue, said, you know, they were intimidating, but they didn't prevent us from going forward into our synagogue, having a service, coming back the next day, because they did it on a Friday night, and we came back the next day. They didn't stop us from being Jews. And what's also important is in Charlottesville, while the police were not as engaged in protection as they should have been, there were members of the interfaith community who stood with the Jews. So Charlottesville was really a shameful moment, but was also an inspiring moment when you saw the reaction of so many good people coming together. And then, of course, look at Houston. Look at what we did for one another, with one another. Houston is an example of real unity for a cause. And I think when you look back at Charlottesville, there will be many stories of people who refused to succumb to that passive resignation, who said, we're not going to allow these people to define us, to deter us from doing what we need to do. So I think we look at what happened there, but let's look at the entire story.
Rabbi, I know you have a lot of joint conferences with people of other faiths. What do you hear from Christians, Protestants, and evangelicals? What is it they're saying?
Well, it depends who you're talking to. I think when I talk to members of different faith communities, for the most part, I hear disappointment. I hear a lot of disgust. I hear a lot of despair. I hear all those things. Usually less despair because you're talking to people of faith who say, we're going to get through this, but we'll get through this together. I have yet to hear anyone I know say this is a great time in America. I haven't heard
right.
that. Now, there may be some who say that. I haven't heard it. So I think many people feel the way we do, that this direction is not the proper path for the American people. So, again, those people standing together, walking together, yelling, shouting. You know, somebody said the Holocaust occurred because people were silent when they should have been shouting. Well, I'm not saying this is a Holocaust, but I'm saying that at every calamitous time, there needs to be a coalition of people who speak forcefully, and that's what is required.
And even within each faith, there's divisiveness, which is scary, too. It's not like we're all standing together. We're just in such trying times that, from what I understand, the psychiatrist's offices are overflowing. The liquor stores are selling out like crazy. There is so much that needs to be done to just calm people down. Everyone is frightened. I mean, every day another negative tweet, another negative announcement. The transsexuals, that really bothered me, these people serving in the armed forces. And even them, they're concerned about losing their jobs. Look what we're dealing with here.
Again, I want someone to come forward and say, this is America being great. You know, we heard Make America Great Again. I want to know, where is America great right now? What can you point to since this election where you can say, this is where we shine? I think if there's any proud moments, it's where communities have come together to help one another. When there's been a desecration of a synagogue, a mosque, or a church, what happens? Communities come together. And they don't wait for a presidential leadership to make the statement. They do it because they have relationships and they value each other. So we're going to continue. We're going to continue to pray, but we're going to continue to pursue a program that says you're not going to weaken us. We're going to strengthen, but we're going to do the strengthening. We're not going to wait for someone else to bring us strength. We're going to do it with our inner spirit, with our hands, with our hearts, and do all we can to make this better. We'll get through this. You know, obviously, you know, we feel weaker, but at the same time, we also will not lose that inner strength, that inner spirit that says you're better than this, and you have to make it better.
I just want to say, as Voltaire said, every man is, and woman, I say, is guilty of all the good he did not do. So activism is essential at this time. We need to make the good voices heard. Rabbi, what message do you want to leave our people today? What is your message, primary message?
The word for community is kihila. In the word kihila, community is the word voice, kol. A community needs to exercise its kol. Kehila needs to speak with a kol. And it's not enough to pray silently. We have to pray loudly and forcefully and try to translate prayers into policies. If you look at the struggles over the years, they were led by people of great faith. We are who we are today because we stand on the shoulders of those who not only prayed, but those who marched, those who protested, those who made sure that we would rise a little bit higher. The word for holiness says to us that when you say the word holiness, you have to stand on the soles of your feet. You got to rise a little bit higher. Whenever that word is used in the congregation, we all need to stand a little bit taller, a little bit higher, but we need to do it together.
And Rabbi, one last thing before you sign off, and we have the very great Rabbi Greenberg next to come on. I love when you lead us in prayer, so please do that.
God, as we approach a new year on the Jewish calendar, we don't just pray for peace for our people, we pray for peace for all people. And we realize, as the well-known statement is, how are you going to clean up the world if you don't clean up your room? So all of us need to go to our rooms. All of us need to go to our rooms, go to our communities, and make sure that we are working together as assiduously as possible. When our rooms are cleaner, when our communities are cleaner, when we are more vocal, then we will bring a greater message to the world. We're all part of the world. We all belong to one another. We are all family. Thank you very much.
Oh, that was awesome, Rabbi
Before
Potasnik.
Rabbi Potasnik goes, and let's see, we also need to thank the leaders and Rabbi Potasnik for standing up and for doing this really difficult work in this unprecedented time, because that's without his kind of leadership, we are not being brought together. So we really have
you're
to
very kind and
thank
very, very humble. I mean, it takes all of us. No one person can do it, but people together can make a difference and have made a difference. Look at history. Why did it work in the past? You know, you look at the civil rights struggle. We're in a much better place than where we were. Why? Because people came together and would not accept the divisiveness of some. They said there's a greater message that has to be delivered by all of us, and we will overcome, meaning we will overcome the evil that is in our midst.
Right, and our jobs just became more difficult, but I think we will now rise to the challenge, according to Rabbi Potasnik's words. The Attorney General just announced that the Dreamers program is being rescinded. So I think this will pull us together, and I think this will be an energizing factor for the 70% that Rabbi Potasnik talked about.
Thanks so much. Okay.
Rabbi Potasnik, I'm very grateful to you. Every time you're on our show, we're very blessed. I just want to go on record. We want you a lot more often, Rabbi. A lot more often.
From the hours of 2 to 6 in the morning. fine with me. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. We really are grateful and appreciate you. Before we bring on Rabbi Greenberg, I want you to hear, in the very wise words of our health guru, Beverly Nadler, why you should be listening to our show every day. We have so much to offer you each day to make a difference in your life.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know, and let's make Joyce Barry and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we do ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and friends.com. And on the upper left of the home page, you'll see my picture. Right under that, it says follow. And if you click on that, you'll become one of the thousands of followers who will be notified of every show, every guest, every topic, so you need not miss any of them. If you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern, you can hear our show in the archives 24/7. In 8 years of these shows, we've never taken one out of the archives. So God bless you. Do listen and join with us in making a difference. Our next guest is Rabbi Eric J. Greenberg, a leading interfaith expert, communications and program director, and an international award-winning reporter. Previously, he was national director of outreach and interfaith affairs for the Anti-Defamation League, where he developed and maintained strategic partnerships with a wide range of faith leaders and organizations, including Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, Protestant, Evangelical, Mormon, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, and so much more. He has had meetings with three Roman Catholic popes, St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, and Pope Francis. Rabbi Greenberg, thank you so much for blessing us by being on our show today.
Well, thank you so much, Joyce. This is following Rabbi Potasnik is quite a challenge, and this is now an even more important day following what the rabbi said. Now that I'm seeing that the announcement has come out of Washington to rescind the Dreamers Act. So I think we have a lot of work to do, and the high holidays for Jewish high holidays are coming up. A lot of reflection, but also a lot of work.
That is so true. And in this crazy, crazy climate, where do we start? As JFK said, if not us, who? If not now, when?
Right, JFK and Hillel, two sages of our past. Yeah, where do we start? It's a good question. I think we start with what Rabbi Potasnik said. We first start with prayer. We start with reinvigorating ourselves and self-reflection, what we need to fix. I love the comment about we need to clean up our, if we're going to clean up the world, we have to start by cleaning up our room. I believe that's a paraphrase of what Rabbi Potasnik said. And so we need to clean up our room, look at what we've done and reflect. Forgiveness is a great piece of the high holidays and becoming better people ourselves. And at the same time, we reach out and try to make the world a better place. And there are going to be, in the course of the next couple of days, lots of pundits and lots of politicians saying what they think we need to do. I think the people have to band together with religious leaders like Rabbi Potasnik and Cardinal Dolan and other national leaders, religious leaders, and say, no, we will not stand for treating Americans living here this way. I'm focusing on the Dreamers Act, but it's a lot more. It's all these things. It's Charlottesville and Nazis. I think Rabbi Potasnik is right. They're not neo-Nazis. They're Nazis and white supremacists. They are only 30% or so of the support for the person who occupies the White House, and so therefore that means there's about 70% of good-willed people who can make their voices heard and make their take action when necessary. And so I think that's we're coming closer to that point.
Talking about the Dreamers Act again for a moment, I saw interviews this morning with some of the Dreamers. Literally, I was crying. I could not believe the fear that they're in. And this is before the repeal came in. They're just taking away the decency from America. I just want to give Trump my message to him on how to make America great again, and I can say it in one word: resign.
Yeah, well, it's been said. It's been said increasingly over the last few weeks. I recall, I think you and I spoke about this a few weeks back. Former Vice President Al Gore, who actually should have been president.
Yes, agreed.
Was asked about after the current occupier of the White House said, failed to say the right things after Charlottesville. They asked Gore his response. Do you have any thoughts or advice for, you know, what should happen now? And he had one word, and he said, resign.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that we're going to see that. But I would like to point out that I find it fascinating and disturbing that it's the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who made the announcement about rescinding the Dreamers Act, not the president. I thought there's lots of things to say about that. But it's the president's decision, but he let somebody else announce it. I find that outrageous, frankly.
Yeah, he lets other people do the dirty work. He's the ultimate bully, the ultimate egomaniac. My God, how can anyone stand him? I can't even put on the television for news. I see his face. I have to change it. I can hear other people say what's going on. I have to keep on top of things, given the show and all of that, and just being a U.S. citizen. But I can't even look at him.
Yeah. We shouldn't probably let this descend into a Trump session.
No, I know.
No pun intended, since it's Sessions that actually made the
announcement. Yes.
But, you know, back to your original thoughts and the theme of what do we do? How do we approach? So the first thing is, of course, as I said before, prayer and self-reflection and taking this time, which is a really the rabbis were brilliant, the sages back in the day of creating rituals and prayers that point us to take us down the journey of looking back at the past year and seeing what we did and taking responsibility for it, the things that we could have done better or things that we shouldn't have done at all, and looking towards the next year and saying, you know what, I will improve on this. I need to change. This is so important for human beings to be able to do this, and so many don't. And the ability to do that with you know, fellow worshipers, to do that in a community, as Rabbi Potasnik pointed out, I'm involved with an interesting program. I think it's terrific to connect college age and post college age Jews in the United States and around the world to find a synagogue that will for free to let them go to High Holiday services. And just by basically making arrangements and coming. As you know, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Joyce, but it's called Synagogue Connect.
No.
Have you? Yeah. And it's an incredible program, and it fits into who has the energy and the time to do a lot of the work that needs to be done in the civic space. It's millennials, young people who are either in college or just out, and this is a way for them to connect with a community anywhere in the United States, just to go on synagogueconnect.org and find a community, find a place to go that it won't cost them, you know, anything to go to pray. So there's a practical thing that you know.
That organization
national. It's actually international. It also in England, in Europe, in Australia. You can go on synagogueconnect.org, and anyone in that age demographic that needs a place to pray for the high holidays, they can find one and call up and contact that house of worship. And it could be anything. It could be Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, Chabad.
And it's designed for the millennials, that program.
It's designed for the millennials. Because, you know, usually what happens is you're in college, and if you, you know, if the place on campus you've been to, you want to find another place, you feel like you, or you just graduated from college, you have a new job, you move to a new city, you're in graduate school, you haven't really connected with anybody. This is a way to find, you know, and it's the price is right.
Yes.
We've arranged for them to be able to come to synagogue and not have to, you know, and not have to pay. As you know, synagogues make up a lot of their budget from, you know, high holiday tickets.
The high holy days, yes.
You know, but in this case,
how long is this organization? And I think that's very, very good.
Yeah, it's how old? It's about a year and a half old. This is the second, I believe, the second year they're reaching out. They've expanded. There's over 700 synagogues now that are participating in this project. And I just bring it up to say that this is yet another way in terms of connecting with community and prayer. And when you connect with community, you know, you share ideas and you are able to put together action plans like what we will probably see over the next several days as a response to what was announced today. I know in New York, for instance, the mayor of New York has a big rally planned today to protest this decision that came out of Washington.
Is that to protest the Dreamers? That
yes,
specifically
yeah. Well,
that.
Well, we didn't know. You know, I think there was still some hope out there that this wouldn't be done. But you know, it's hard. I don't want to go back to talking about the person in the White House, but
you can't even say his name, Rabbi. I noticed
right
that
now,
you can't
right
even
now,
speak
the idea,
it.
Well, the idea of young people who were brought up in this country, who know English, who are in school, who are in college, who are contributing to our society, and are being threatened to be sent to a place they don't know and they don't even speak the language, both Republicans and Democrats. I mean, here's an issue that both, you know, support this act and support this.
So was that an executive order? In other words, it wasn't voted on in Congress. I couldn't imagine Congress
let's see. So the Attorney General, who is also, you know, obviously lied to Congress, as we saw several months back, and has been belittled by the president, announced today the program known as DACA, D-A-C-A, that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded. So it's not an act of Congress. Congress could, by the way, I guess, try to bring into law in the next couple of months, but he's rescinded it, and it's such a hateful thing to do to so many. As you said, you heard Dreamers earlier. I think you were
yes,
probably listening to the radio.
Yes, I was in tears when I heard them.
These
a
people,
mother
they
of
they
like
didn't...
five children, a single mom, on the what happens to my children. It's just heart-wrenching, everything that happens out of this administration. It's so beyond my reality. Even the transsexuals in the military that are serving our country, and they're being attacked, everything. Wherever we turn, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and so you know the insanity as you originally laid out the theme, the insanity continues. In fact, I think has been ratcheted up as of today. So how do we deal
yes.
with that? Yeah, how do we deal with that? So again, it's the words of our mentor Rabbi Potasnik. You know, yes, we do need to pray, but yes, we also need to take action. And it's when good people stand up. That changes made. I think Houston is a great example. Look at the humanity, the positive actions taken by first responders and taken by just ordinary people trying to save their neighbors, trying to save people who were stuck in the flood and on the top of their roof. We all saw these images, saving pets, saving animals. The incredible outpouring that shows us that all is not lost. we have a majority of good-willed Americans, whether they're religious or not, whether they go to services or not. I like to say people of good faith or not, if they have no faith, it doesn't matter. If they're good people.
Right.
This is what we saw in Houston. This is what we saw after 9/11. I was a reporter back then, and I drove past in the morning of the bombings of the World Trade Center, and the next weeks of the firefighters of which Rabbi Potasnik is a chaplain to the fire department here in New York City. And the police department, all the responders who came, the ordinary people who went down there to work on the pile, to work trying to save people. This is the human instinct of most good people, and I think the majority of Americans probably feel that way and are probably horrified. Remember, most. I believe it's almost 3 million, maybe 2.8 million Americans did not vote for the person in the White House.
I love that you can't use his name.
I can't
look at him and you can't say his name. I love it. Go ahead.
Well, not after what's been done to innocent people today who are just trying to live in a
survive.
Country that has standed as a beacon for liberty and opportunity in this world, for so long, and now are frightened and threatened and for no reason. So I think that today is a turning point. It, like I said earlier, this is it's a privilege to be with you and Rabbi Potasnik and to talk about the upcoming High Holidays and to talk about prayer but also I think today is a turning point of action. We've been saying this after every harrowing announcement that comes out of Washington. The transgender, other people who have volunteered, think about this, talking about spirituality, people who love their country and have volunteered, because we have a volunteer army to defend our country, defend our rights, defend the rights of Americans, whether every religion, those of any religion and of none. They are signed up to give their lives to defend the United States of America, and the commander in chief turns around and says, "We don't want you.
You're out.
We don't want you because of how God made you."
Right.
And then you have a group of again, everything is not apple pie. Then you have a group of evangelical. I don't even know if we can call them leaders, but evangelical pastors who put out last week, I don't know if you saw this, and I think it might be, it's called the Nashville document, I believe, the Nashville Agreement, where they basically have called for the return to biblical marriage. And this is an affront and an attack on gay, transgender, LGBTQ folks.
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, and I actually had a back and forth with one of the pastors, and I said, "Well, can you explain to me what you mean by a biblical marriage? Because when I go to the Torah, or what they see as the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, and up through the New Testament." There's all kinds of marriages. There's what Rachel and Leah, and then took two concubines and then married them later on. I'm not sure that's the – is that the model that you want? Is it David and Bathsheba, whose marriage started, obviously, with a huge problem, David arranging for the Bathsheba's husband to go to the front lines to be killed so he could take Bathsheba? I mean, this is all in our in what they read as the Bible as well. So what is a biblical marriage, I asked, and I didn't get a response, so I'm still waiting.
Yes, that was right on, of course. Well, like you said, you're a man of faith. I'm a person of faith as well. But even if you have no faith in what you want to say, the universe, God, whatever you think about, just think of being a human being, about being humane. And these announcements every day, they're so beyond my reality that we have this in our country, that our very own allies are laughing at us. They can't imagine how we let this happen. And our enemies, more importantly, are using this time to take advantage of us, because they see a government in disarray. So we have the threat of nuclear devastation right here, right now, because we're so vulnerable right now with a moron at the helm.
Well, it's you know, without you know, getting too much into the international politics, but just as seeing what we know from reading, and I think that's plenty at this point. I don't think North Korea would be doing what it's doing if we had a different person in the White House.
That's what I'm saying. That was my point. Only
I think it's fascinating. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm so passionate against this administration, I can't even try to maintain political correctness. But I agree with you. I do believe that's true.
And also, what's fascinating is, and remember again, the subtext of what's going on in our national politics is an investigation of the president and his finances and his campaign. And I find it very interesting that while North Korea is rattling its saber, its sword,
its might.
You know, Russia has been very quiet, which I find it very, very interesting. And you know, you have China, who is there and is one of the, you know, on the Security Council, also trying to figure out what we're doing and why what we're doing really isn't making much sense. So you are 100% correct. We are confounding our allies, confusing our adversaries, and that is a recipe for disaster.
Right. Absolutely. And I want to offer this quote as well. Edmund Burke, it's one of my very favorites. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men, and I always add, and women, to do nothing. Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing, because he could do only a little. And I say every bit counts. Every bit counts. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And again, with the military, with everything that's going on, we need people to step up to the plate, starting with the Republican Party. We really need them to step up to the plate. And outside of the two you referenced earlier, they're not.
Yeah, you know what? If we go back in history, Joyce, if you go back to even to Watergate, I like to say that I quote, you know, that Senator Howard Baker was, I think, a hero. He stood up and said, you know, my country over party. We need to do something. I'm going to ask tough questions. But, you know, if you look at the history and look at it really closely, the Republicans also dragged their feet for Nixon until the end, until it was clear that there was no way that he was going to survive. So it's a process. We live in a different world now. We live in a world of, as we know, Twitter and emails and instant messages, and you know, and back then there was none of that. You actually had to pick up the newspaper, the Washington Post, most of the time, to find out what was going on with the Watergate investigation. But so things have speeded up.
You know what's interesting about that, Rabbi, is that everywhere we're seeing them recounting the Watergate thing. Now they're trying to show us the similarities of what's going on. I watched the whole thing on CNN yesterday about the Watergate step-by-step what happened. They're bringing that out to show the similarities.
Yes, and one of my early heroes as in college when I was going into journalism, Carl Bernstein, is constantly talking about the similarities and also some obviously distinctions between the early reporting of Watergate and the investigation and what's happening today. And remember, again, there was no MSNBC, there was no cable back then. It was really a different world. So my point is, it took a long time for the Republicans, even back then, to come around to realize. And I guess the hope here is that they will, stand up and say, you know, our country is more important. The welfare and security of our country is more important than supporting the person in the White House who was never really a Republican anyway. And again, coming back to, we can pray that occurs, but at the same time, we also need to do things on the ground to make sure that occurs.
And Rabbi, what message would you like to leave our listeners with? What is your message?
Well, my message is, I'll just say that hopefully in a more spiritual way, that I think we should continue to pray now more than ever that our nation can come together and the majority of good-willed people of faith and no faith find a mechanism, a way to work together to make it known that we will not stand for these kind of anti-American divisive actions emanating from Washington and from the White House, and we will continue to be vigilant and won't stand for this anymore. And I think we're headed towards after today. I think there'll be a lot of activity, and with in a nonviolent, democratic way to find our way back to raising classic American values of honesty, caring for brotherhood and sisterhood, and caring for those less fortunate than we are. And that's what I'd like to end with.
Yeah, we talked about in the show the DACA program, how painful, what's going on with that, revoking it. Transsexuals, how painful it is for that whole community. What about the march, Jews will not replace us? Those of us that, people that were in the Holocaust, people that have relatives that were, we need to see this being revisited with the Nazi slogans everywhere. The country by far is a worse place each and every day that this administration is in office. Okay, Rabbi, I would love you to conclude with your personal and special prayer.
Well, I pray that God gives us the strength to calmly and diligently work through the crises that we are going through, and I say crises is multiple, and give us the strength to push on, work together in collegiality and community, and overcome what we're facing, the challenges today.
Thank you for that, and I want to say I'm inclined to agree with you that this may be the turning point. I think of divorce. When I hear about people getting divorced, it's never the last thing. Something happens, and they're getting a divorce, that thing. No, it was the 49 things that happened, and the 50th was the last straw where the line was crossed, and they can't take anymore, and that's when the divorce set in. Not any particular thing in itself. The final straw, and hopefully this is the final straw.
We shall see, but we shall see with an eye towards hope and working together and keeping our eye on the ball.
Absolutely, and I want to end the show with my special prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. And folks, go out and make someone happy today. Do your part in making a difference. And we invite you to sing along with us and dance along with us and laugh along with us. And you can do that right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you, Rabbi. Great job, as always.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day.
Wow.
And listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Wow.